stuff you can use, all kinds of fascinating and interesting things. But first, ladies and gentlemen, do I have a drum roll? Do we have a drum roll anywhere? Nope. Simply,
Very professional.
No drum roll. Yes, indeed. All right. We have a special guest on the phone who's probably in the... Oh, there we go. Sure, now we got a drum roll. Good. Thank you so much. If he hasn't hung up already. We have a very, very, very special guest on the line. For those of you who are older than dirt, that would be me. The names Quick Draw, Mac Paint, HyperCard, kind of quicken your pulse, bring a tear to your eye. We have with us a gentleman who was involved in all of those things, wrote Mac Paint, HyperCard, Quick Draw.
He's forgotten more than we, most folks can remember.
Designed much of the original Macintosh interface, and then eventually left his coding cubicle for the big blue room. And now is a world-renowned nature photographer, Mr. Bill Atkinson, on the line. I couldn't possibly be more thrilled. Mr. Atkinson, welcome to Soundbites.
Thank you, Nick. Your show sounds like a real crack-up.
Thank you. We try to have fun, and once in a while we may even dispense some computer advice. We don't care.
Rarely, but we do.
I'm Nick Francesco. With me is...
Dave Enright.
Steve Ray.
And Rob Linton's on the phone, so you may be talking to all of us at some point. Now, let me just explain about a little bit about Mr. Atkinson. I already told you he did Quick Draw, Mac Paint, and HyperCard. And at the moment, he's at the George Eastman House.
Right.
Putting up, giving a talk and putting, and are you all, it's an exhibit, right?
Of we've got a great exhibit now of large, matted, and framed fine art photographs from my new book, Within the Stone.
Right.
Those are up now and will be up until January 9th. Anybody wants to drop by, they can see them. It doesn't cost anything to see them.
Yeah. Now, let me explain for those of you who are listening. Many of our listeners are here in Rochester, and as we all know, a prophet is without honor in his own hometown. For those of us who think of the George Eastman House as that big place on East Avenue with the elephant head on the wall, the Eastman House is probably the number one film history museum in the world and a living photography gallery, and it's world renowned. And to have an exhibit of your art there, not every schlub off the street gets that. So, Mr. Atkinson is well respected within the community, and we're honored, sir, to have
beautiful
you
work.
Here. Yeah, your work is phenomenal.
Did you get a chance to see the book?
I have not yet seen the book.
Oh,
no.
You're missing something.
I admit
I'm
that.
I'm sorry they didn't get one to you. You really should have one in front of you.
Well, I should.
It's very visual. You know, it's hard to describe it without seeing it.
Well, tell us a little bit about
your website up. It's a wonderful website with some beautiful pictures on it now.
Go to the rocks section of it. Go to images and rocks.
Yep.
Yeah, we were there the other day. My wife is an artist, and while computers are just, you know, basically a tool to her, and she's never very impressed by them, she spent quite a long time viewing all of your photographs.
Thanks. For those following who are listening to the radio next to their computer, you can go to www.billatkinson.com to follow along at the website.
And they also get the book through that, too?
Yeah, you can order it there. They also have it at, Barnes & Noble and Borders and Amazon and all the others. But
it's called Within the Stone.
I'll autograph it. I'll mail it out and autograph it.
God bless you.
Oh,
great.
Great deal.
What this is a work of, it's a book of photographs of polished rocks. These are cut with a diamond saw and then polished to a glass smooth surface, and then a portion of them photographed. And they make images that really look like paintings, much more than the photographs. They look like landscapes or sort of, instead of a photograph of a landscape, more like a photograph of a dream of a landscape.
Yes.
They're very evocative.
Yeah.
I've had a wonderful time working on this. I've worked on this for the last 5 years, which is actually longer than I worked on the Macintosh. And I think it will affect as many people's lives as the Macintosh has, but it's a beautiful work of art that I'm very proud of.
And it's quite phenomenal.
I hope around Christmas time people think of their friends and check out this book as a possible Christmas gift.
Yeah, if you go to billatkinson.com and click on the Within the Stone book in the lower left there, you'll see some of the pictures from it. It is
I like
just...
that one image, 2116. It looks like you're
Jasper
in a cave.
Stone.
Oh, yes.
And looking out. That is gorgeous.
These are very, very evocative images. I love that about them. They leave a lot of room for each person to interpret them. It's kind of like if you see a landscape photograph of some aspen trees, the picture kind of tells you what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when you see one of these rock photographs, there's more mystery and more room for personal interpretation. The answer isn't all given to you, and different people will see different things in them.
Right, you're kind of collaborating with the viewer.
Pardon?
You're kind of collaborating with the viewer.
Yeah, they're a little bit like colored Rorschach tests.
Yep.
You know, each person's different background causes them to see different things, but nobody sees them as flat, polished rocks.
Okay. What gave you the brought this to your eye?
Well, I was photographing the landscape in Arizona at the Petrified Forest,
mm-hmm.
and I got down in a riverbed, and I found that there were some rocks that had been naturally cracked and then polished by river water. And the colors at those cracked and polished places were just so much more than the weather-worn outer rocks. But I got attracted, and I said, wow, I got to chase this down more. So I went to local rock stores and bought pieces of petrified wood that had been cut and polished.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought them back home and carefully photographed them. And I loved the imagery I started getting.
It is cool.
So then I started photographing other kinds of rocks. And then I started every year going to the big Tucson Gem and Mineral Show the first 2 weeks of February every year in Tucson, where thousands of dealers and collectors come and they bring the very best pieces. And then I would show them a prototype of the book I was working on and say, I want to photograph your very best pieces. And they would bring out pieces and say, well, this one's not for sale, but I'll let you photograph it. And each year I brought large fine art prints back to thank people who'd let me photograph the year before.
Yep.
And so I got very popular very quickly. They saw me coming and they'd say, oh, somebody wants to buy this, but I said, not till you photograph it. And so I found I was able to collect, I actually looked at about 10,000 slabs of rocks, and I photographed over 1,000. And it was really a heartbreaking labor to pare down to the 72 for the book. I mean, which of my children will I let go of?
So we see Son of Within the Stone?
Hopefully. Let's see how well this book works. And
the Pebble.
If it is successful, then maybe they'll give me a chance to do another one.
Yeah. Listen, can you hold on? We have to take a break, but can you hold on and talk?
You got it. I'll be here.
God bless you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Mr. Bill Atkinson, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. It's Nick. We've been talking a lot about the Anonymizer, and you need to know about this thing. It's Anonymizer Private Surfing 2004. You get a spyware killer, you get an anti-spam desktop, and you get the Anonymizer, which lets you leave your computer's address unlisted on the internet. Now, normally, this is going to cost you $90, but if you go to www.getprivatenow.com, that's www.getprivatenow.com, type in my name, Nick. You can get this $90 value for a mere $49.95. That's right. For $49.95, you get a spyware killer, an anti-spam desktop, and the Anonymizer. $90 worth of value for $49.95. GetPrivateNow.com. Type in my name, Nick, and you get that special price of $49.95. You can't possibly avoid this. You need to go to GetPrivateNow.com and get the Anonymizer. GetPrivateNow.com.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And I'm Bill Atkinson.
All right. Thank you. Good one.
See, it took us months to get Rob to know what to do, and Bill does it in the first commercial.
He's a smart man. He's
all
a smart
right.
man.
We got to save that snippet.
Yes, we do. I talked over it like a moron. Let's try that again. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And I'm Bill Atkinson.
Perfect. Right. Now, I do have to ask you a little bit about what we did was we have a forum up on the Soundbites website.
Yes.
That's at soundbites.org, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And I asked, because I don't trust any of us to have smart questions, so I asked some of the folks up on the website to post some questions. And, of course, avoiding all the, and I got a bunch of in the mail, too. And avoiding,
so you got the most embarrassing ones.
Yes, exactly. Avoiding all the how wonderful was it at Apple in the early days, which
yes.
I'm sure it just was wonderful.
It was wonderful.
I'm sure it was.
That's taken care of now.
Here's so far, yeah. So far, my favorite question out of the bunch. This is from our friend BOFH. That's lowercase BOFH, not the BOFH. What programming interface, not code base, but interface, excites you? Do you even do computer stuff now?
Yes, but only as necessary for my art. I had to write 30 custom software programs to crack the twisted Epson driver to make better profiles for it.
See, this is the kind of guy, that's not working. Wait, let me fix it.
Well, yeah. I do get a little obsessive and compulsive and try to, I want to make something really beautiful.
Yeah,
so in this case, I spent 1,200 hours and made over 500,000 spectral measurements and wrote these 30 custom software programs. And the resulting profiles work for any Epson 9600 or 7600. So I put them as a free download on Epson's website, too, so that other artists could benefit
from
it.
God bless you.
Whoa, are you the man?
That's it. So what?
Well, I feel like, at Apple, my work was making tools to empower creative people.
Exactly.
Right.
And now I'm being empowered. I didn't have to write InDesign and Photoshop.
Yeah.
I was actually at Macworld in 1987 when you introduced the Mac 2 and HyperCard, and it was just such an astounding revelation on that. That's so easy for the average person to write basically software.
I wish our web were writable. Our web today is really the platform. It isn't Macs versus PCs.
Right.
It's the web.
Right.
That is the platform.
Yep.
And what I wish is it weren't read-only. That's stupid. What we have is a web browser instead of a web author. It should be just as easy for Joe Sixpack to sit down and write a web page, in a few hours.
Right.
As it is for them to make a graphics document.
Well, we're seeing a lot of that with web blogging or blogging in
the
common vernacular.
That's, but it's sort of filling in some text into an already made form.
Yeah.
So
it isn't like you could draw your own document.
Right. So what we need to do is replace the browser and the web server with the HyperCard client server.
Well, HyperCard was sort of it's 6 years before Mosaic.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a web browser, but chained to a hard drive. There wasn't any internet. There wasn't any web.
Right.
But what it was an authoring system that let people make their own stacks of cards.
Exactly.
And what we should have for the web now is a simple authoring system that everybody can use. That isn't, you don't have to become some super web maven or hire some super web maven to get your website up.
Right. And that was the beauty of HyperCard. You needed to know very little real coding.
It was sort of like a software construction kit. A software like an Erector set. You can put together the pieces with a screwdriver. You don't have to have the machine shop to be able to make all of the components.
Yeah. And there were some great early games that came out. Oregon Trail, Cosmic Osmo, a complete game written in HyperCard by novice teachers, mostly.
In those days,
I still use HyperCard all the time. I use it to run. I have a business, Bill Atkinson Photography Incorporated.
Sure.
And my wife wrote an elaborate series of HyperCard stacks to keep track of the print inventory, the accounts payable, the taxes we owe, all kinds of stuff about running a business. And we really depend on those. And I'm kind of bummed that Apple hasn't made an OS X native form, but at least it still runs under Classic. So we've all moved over to OS X, but we use Classic to keep HyperCard running.
Sure. And I need it for Linux, frankly. I need HyperCard.
Well, there are several open source projects on making open source HyperCard like things, and I know they're progressing well because I keep getting feedback from people working on those, and looks like they're coming along well.
Excellent. Well, I'll look for those and keep an eye on them. Thank you. Now back to our question here.
Yeah. And then we'll plug.
So I like Apple. I like AppleScript as a platform. I write a lot of stuff in AppleScript because it can drive all the other software on my computer, like subroutines. I can drive Photoshop to do this and do that and do this, and that power to build on top of all of the applications that I know and love is worth more to me than whether it's a little faster because it's compiled instead of interpreted, or whether it's just the ability to be the Uber language is very powerful.
Well, listen, we have to take another break, but if you can hold on one more time, we'll come back and plug you and talk a little bit more.
I'd like to read at the end. I'd like to read the quote from the end of the book.
I would love that. Thank you.
Wrote.
Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Bill Atkinson, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
A
to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And I'm Bill Atkinson.
Excellent. And we're here with a man who's known as the godfather of the PC. Is that in the Marlon Brando sense, or I'm confused? Okay.
You see, a lot of the concepts we take for granted, even on Windows now, started with Bill.
Yeah. Oh, no, I have a very quick question, though. A very quick question. There's an what's probably an urban legend.
Uh-oh,
exactly right, about the design, the creation of the Lisa and the Macintosh.
Yes.
That when you folks went and saw the Xerox Star, assuming that even happened, I'm making no
assumptions. It was the Xerox Alto.
Oh, the Alto, right. That you came back and said, oh, look at all this cool stuff, and you thought you had seen overlapping windows and spent a lot of time figuring out how to do that, which the Xerox people never had figured out how to do.
What I saw was I did see overlapping windows, which, by the way, were invented in 1968 by Douglas Engelbart along with the mouse.
Right.
The Xerox, it was 1979. I saw overlapping windows. What I thought I saw was refreshing, drawing into a behind window may often have an odd-shaped piece visible, not just a rectangle worth, but, you know, if there's another window on top, there might be sort of an L shape or so I thought I saw drawing clipped to arbitrary areas. So I knew there was a way to do it, right? And so knowing that there was a way to do it, I invented a new concept, regions, which made it possible to draw very quickly, about 1,000 times faster than what people could do before, drawing into arbitrary-shaped areas. Later, I talked to somebody who had worked at Xerox, and they said, how did you do that? And I thought, you guys did it. Said, no. If we drew into behind window, we had to redraw all the windows in front of it, and there was a whole lot of flicker. So sometimes ignorance can be very empowering.
Yeah.
If you think something is possible, it may become possible.
Right. If you don't know, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I wanted to make sure that listeners knew that there were events happening now.
We'll talk about those next.
I'm at George Eastman House right now, and I'll be teaching a workshop on digital printing between 1 and 5 p.m. today. In the Curtis Theater at GEH, and that that workshop really goes into how to get the colors right between your transparencies or digital captures and your monitors and your printers, and how to make fine art prints using an inkjet printer and be happy with the colors you get.
Right.
And then I'll be doing other talks on Monday and Tuesday. I'll be giving some talks at RIT and a lecture. So at RIT, I'll be giving a lecture at 9 a.m. I'll be giving a lecture at 6:30 p.m. at George Eastman House on Monday. And then on Tuesday at 10 a.m., I'll be giving a lecture at RIT, 20 Years with Macintosh, which will actually go back and look at the user interface choices that were made and all of the bumbling steps that led us from the first overlapping Windows user interface to what we end up with now, including the invention of the pull-down menu. So I actually have Polaroid photographs that I took of my Lisa prototype to share with the rest of the team, and they've become a wonderful documentary of how we bumbled engineered our way into the Lisa user interface with a lot of feedback from people making mistakes.
Well, I hope to attend at least one of those two lectures. I work at RIT, so skip a couple of meetings, I'll definitely be there.
Well, if you have to be at the one from 10 to noon on Tuesday, October 26th.
I will indeed. Thank you
that
so much.
That will be in the web auditorium.
Now, you wanted to...
I want to read you the last poem. So in the book, Within the Stone, which is a wonderful Christmas gift book, each mineral has a photographic interpretation, which is art in and of itself, to be appreciated. But then it's accompanied with a literary interpretation, a poem or essay that's been written by a famous writer specifically for my photograph. And then in the back, scientific interpretation, deep and rigorous commentary about the source of the rock and the chemistry and the geology and the history. But for the last poem, I asked my daughter to write it. And she's 19 years old. She's a second-year writing student at Brown University. Loves it there. And what she wrote, she took the bigger perspective. Instead of writing about what she saw in this one stone, she wrote a poem called Beyond the Stone. That is the labor of the jasper or the agate. It lays itself down patiently and permanently. It never asks to know its own design. From where we stand beyond the stones, we see patterns they cannot. A crystal lattice forms an egg. A clump of iron forms a flame. If these minerals, in their blindness, were allowed to make such beauty, why not assume that we have been allowed to make our own?
That's quite beautiful.
That is.
We don't have to... The minerals, they don't have the perspective to see what it is they're building.
Right.
And neither do we as we go about our daily lives. But we should assume that we're building something beautiful with our lives.
That is phenomenal. Mr. Atkinson, it's been
an honor and a pleasure talking to you, sir. Thank you very much.
The book is called Within the Stone. It's the best $40 you'll ever spend. It's the most beautiful thing
I've ever seen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and good luck with everything you're doing. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Long distance on the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers on News Radio 1180. WHAM.
I'm Brad Davies, and I've got all the scores and highlights on the WHAM Morning News in 3 hours.
From PCs to Macs, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites, and we are ready to take your calls. So call in at the numbers you know, 295-1180 if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, star 1180. Or that 295-1180 is the toll-free line, the 800-295-1180. Regular number is 222-1180. Before we do that, we're going to get a little bit of news in, and we're going to start with Steve.
Yeah, we had announcements in the Apple world this week. Faster, better-equipped iBooks, higher clock speeds up to 1.33 gigahertz, and now wireless networking, the airport card, is standard on all of Apple's laptop line. And there was a price drop, so they added $200 worth of stuff and dropped the price $100, which is a pretty good deal. They've also added a SuperDrive option in the iBook at the high end in the 14-inch. And what this is generating a lot of speculation about a G5 PowerBook, because they keep tweaking the G4 iBooks, which is the consumer model. They need to have a professional model that's that much better to help differentiate in the marketplace. And Apple has been saying for a year now, since the G5 came out, that there's a lot of engineering hurdles to overcome for heat dissipation and getting the chip to run cool enough. So we'll have to see how well that comes out. They did introduce a new Power Mac now at the low end, the Power Mac Tower, with a single 1.8 gigahertz for $1,500, which is $500 less than the previous Power Mac. So now there's a very interesting question that on the consumer end, for $1,500, you get a G5 with a 17-inch flat-screen monitor, or for $1,500, you get a G5 tower with all the expansion potential that has with your own monitor. So we find that most people, even in the PC world, never use all their slots. You know, once you have your audio card and your video card and your network card, which are now built into most motherboards, you don't need the slot, so the towers really don't buy that much for you.
Space for cooling.
More space for cooling.
The SATA drives in a PC, they're running a lot hotter because they're a lot faster. And I've noticed in some cases I've had to put an extra fans.
Yeah, a lot of people just like the comfort of knowing they could expand their machine. Mm-hmm. It's like you buy a sports car, the speedometer goes to 200. You'll know you'll never get it above 55. Yeah, but knowing that you could is a big thing. Also, next week on Tuesday, the 26th, Apple is inviting members of the press to an event at the California Theater in San Jose. And going along with their recent television commercials, they're going to have the band U2 there. Steve Jobs, Bono, and The Edge invite you to attend a special event. There's a lot of speculation whether it's going to be a custom iPod with exclusive U2 tracks on it. And there's a lot of speculation about the next generation iPod that might have a color screen and might have photo viewing capabilities, video out capabilities. So we'll see what happens there on Tuesday.
All right. Dave?
Dave
needs his glasses. His eyes are old. He's good, but his eyes are getting old.
Oh, no. This is tough getting used to. For years, I've had, lineless bifocals.
Sure.
And Tuesday, as I was telling you, I had to frame them, and I said, they're titanium.
Titanium.
Titanium. My computer's titanium, and it's still broke, too. course, it's been 4 years now of wrenching it back and forth.
Well, I'm sitting there cleaning them, and all of a sudden, I've got all these pieces of metal, and my lens is sitting in my hand. And I'm like, oh, shoot! So, consequently, it's going to take me 3 weeks to go out and get them, and I'm going to have to turn around and put up with these bifocal or these reading glasses.
I do have to say, Dave, that unfortunately that adds about 10 years to you.
I know that. Oh, well. Anyways, a few hot things going on. Nadeva, who makes the video chips, is looking, and which are on quite a few motherboards, is now looking to put a firewall on the motherboards that they put in. So that it'll actually be a hardware firewall on your new motherboards coming out later on early part of next year. Intel is boosting its Centron chips up to a 2.1 gigahertz. That's for all your folks that are into laptops and want more mobile power. They're definitely coming out with that. Again, they're going to have a wide variety, and they're expected out first part of next year. AMD is upping their chips. They're coming out with the Athlon 64FX55 and the Athlon 64 4000 Plus. In contrast to Intel, who said their 4000 chips are going to have to back off a little bit. And Intel is looking at making wireless USB secure.
That would be nice.
Yeah, because right now more and more devices and folks are going to wireless. They've got to get a handle on the security because, as you well know, you open it up and away you go, you're wide open.
Yep. All right.
You know, what happens when we don't get phone calls?
Yeah.
I mean, Steve...
Well, I wasn't going to mention that. I was just making sure the phones were working, and now we're getting...
Steve goes out in the other room at one of the desks and calls me, and I didn't even realize it was him.
Yeah.
Not by his name. Steve, just making sure the phones were working.
We're undergoing a lot of construction here at the WAM headquarters. We're putting in new studios, and there's new air conditioning today that isn't working, so maybe something happened to the phones.
Right, and although we had the great Bill Atkinson here earlier, we are in fact, accepting phone calls now, so... Feel free to call in. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
Pull up. Answering your computer questions for over 15 years, it's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
You know, when he says it like that, kind of makes me a little tired. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Bob Linton.
And a little bit more news before we get to the phone.
That's life. That's life. That's what all the people say.
Yeah.
You're riding high in April.
Shot down in May. All right. Here we go. Security bugs in all the major browsers this week. In Internet Explorer, in all the browsers from Mozilla, in Opera, in Conqueror, two third-party plugins for Internet Explorer, lots and lots of stuff. I'm not even going to bother to enumerate them. I want you to go and update your browser and fix it right now. If an update is not available for your browser, perhaps it's time to move to a new browser. For those of you who are living away from the reaches of both cable and DSL, there may be good news in the offing for you. The FCC has cleared Internet access over power lines. The Federal Communications Commission adopted rules on Tuesday that would enable utility companies to offer an alternative to the broadband communication services now provided by cable and phone companies. Broadband over power lines. It should probably be BOPL. BOPL. Broadband over power lines is a technology that uses a special modem that simply plugs into an electrical outlet. Using a power line to carry communications traffic has been electromagnetic interference over to various types of radio waves. And the commission ruled that it would tolerate a small amount of radio interference in certain areas in exchange for making the broadband market more competitive. So for those of you who have not been able to get broadband yet, you've got a chance keep looking for your power company to offer it right over the phone line.
There have been home-based Ethernet over power solutions, so you can get Internet into your garage
right.
without running a power, and satellite-based. Your satellite TV supplier can do satellite Internet, but that's $100 a month.
Right, it's $100 a month, and up is still by phone line.
Yeah.
There's another fishing hole found in Google. We'll be talking a little bit about Google later. So they fixed it, but it was there for a while. Firefox. The Firefox advocates have been calling for donations to pay for an ad in the New York Times. 3 days into the campaign, they beat their target. They wanted to get 2,500 people to donate $30 or more. And, in fact, they've already raised $100,000. Microsoft wants your next car or SUV to run Windows. There are far too many jokes to come to mind to say even one of them. Web Radio, the folks who, the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, they reached a $1.7 billion deal with the Radio Music License Committee to let stations legally stream their on-air content over the Internet.
Finally, so you don't have to pay ASCAP $1,000 per song when you play it.
Yeah.
Right, and for those of you who are wondering when somebody's going to do something about spyware, well, God bless the United States government. The House is proposing a Spy Act to add civil penalties over what has emerged as an extraordinary frustration for Internet users. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and maybe even some of your phone calls on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Rochester. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. I promise you we will get to the phones very shortly, but first I have to mention we do have a trivia contest going on. We're going to give away a copy of Anonymizer. You've heard me talk about it. We're going to give away a copy of Anonymizer to the person who answers this trivia question. Even those of you who are on the line already, listen carefully, because you also can participate in the trivia. Which was the first company to market a computer based on Intel's 386 processor? Which was the first company to market a computer based on Intel's 386 processor? If you think you know the answer to that question, give us a no, Dave. You can't answer the question.
No, no, no. The folks that are trying to get in right now, hold on for a minute. Don't hang up because Rob had to take some tele readings. So
yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about the website of the week.
But he'll be getting to you in a minute. But I found this great web product. I know there's a lot of parents out there that, you know, they worry about where their kids go on the web.
Sure.
And especially with now instant messaging. They're, you know, getting into chat and the parents might come into the room and all of a sudden they close down the browser. Or it's even good for businesses. Well, there's this product called eBlaster, and the version is 5.0. And it's going for, I believe right now, it's like $50. What this basically does, folks, if you have kids or you want to know what's going on, say even in your company, whether folks are using instant messenger, email, what websites they're going to, keystrokes, done, this program, you can put it on there, you set yourself up as the administrator, and you literally get a log file of everything that goes on. In other words, say you're an instant messenger. Anything that you or any of your kids type and other things that are typed on the screen, it copies every bit of the screen image.
Nice.
So any kids that are replying back, so if you're a little worried of what kids are saying or doing, you know, because nowadays you don't know, especially in Instant Messenger, they get talking back and forth. You don't know who's lurking out there. They could sit there, and folks have heard the story before, sit there and say they're this name or that name, and they're only 14 years old or 15 years old, and they're going to be a grown adult. They're just sitting there stuck.
And most commonly are.
Yeah.
I did, for a while, I did training for the police department on the Internet.
Yep.
And we'd always go into chat rooms, and I would say, now watch, and I would be, you know, Stud Muffin 69, and then I'd be, you know, Mary, a 13-year-old girl. It kind of kills the fantasy to think that the person at the other end could be me.
Yep. But this is a great product that, I mean, if you're concerned about what your kids and that are doing, you can go and check it out. It's called eblaster.com. It's a great product. Great features, because the older version, a friend of mine, Bruce, was the one that led me on to this one, so I got to give Bruce credit for this. But once I saw it, and some of the features that they improved just from version 3 was unbelievable. Because, of course, kids found a way to the older version to crank it off. And now this version, though, hides all that stuff. You know, can't get around it, and they're going to get nailed if they wind up going somewhere where they shouldn't be or be talking a way you don't want them.
Right. Very quickly, a little bit about our website. We are getting to the phones in just a moment. We do a poll every week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like me to remind you. Last week's poll was about instant messaging. 423 of you answered the poll, making it number 21 on the all-time hit list. The question was, I use instant messaging. The choices were regularly, irregularly, never, and I live on IM, you insensitive clod. The winner at 58% was never, followed by irregularly, regularly, and I live on IM, you insensitive clod. This week's poll is about Google. We had some interesting things about Google in the news this week. We already read you one of them. And the one that caught my eye was about, is your boss Googling you? 1 in 4 net surfers have searched online for information about someone at work or in business or whatever. So my question is, whom do you Google? Friends, relatives, prospective dates, my kids, fellow employees, people I do business with, who don't I Google, and myself regularly, you insensitive clod. So far, we have about 44 of them in there right now, and half of you said, who don't I Google? So please join us on our website, soundbites.org, and vote in the poll. Once you're done voting in the poll, you'll notice a yellow box underneath the poll, and that will lead you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Thanks so much. And you can leave an opinion. So far, we have about 11 of them, one or two of which actually... No, apparently none of them have anything to do with the question, but that's not a problem. Now we're actually going to get to the phones. You know what? Normally I would apologize about not getting to the phones till now, but we had such a great interview with Bill Atkinson that I am unrepentant.
That's not likely to happen.
That's exactly right. I am entirely unrepentant. But our first caller is Guy. Guy, where are you calling from?
Fairport,
New York. Wow. What's your question?
Can you hear me okay?
I don't know. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Are you wearing that little jacket? Go ahead. What's your question?
Having a problem with a scheduled program in XP.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a backup batch file. And if I double-click on the batch file, it runs. But as a scheduled program, I have a DOS window pop up, but it doesn't actually run. The window pops up and then disappears. I'm running it as the admin user. Like I said, the window opens, but it doesn't actually run the script.
Have you tried running the script that it runs?
Is it a bat file?
Yeah, it's a bat file. If I go into the directory where the batch file is and run it, it runs fine.
Does that batch file call its components just by name or by full path? The point I'm making here is that it depends entirely on what the environment is that you're running it in. It may be that it needs full path names. Even if you change directory into that path or whatever thing you're doing, by putting the full path name right from C colon backslash program files backslash whatever, whatever, whatever.
And, with Windows XP, that you've lost the command line where you,
right.
you booted up, it used to set command to the various paths.
Right, and it doesn't do that anymore, so you need to put the full path in there. And remember, if you put a space in any of those folder names, you have to put the whole path in quotes.
Okay. So the command is just the xcopy command. First I cd to the document directory and then run an xcopy command.
Yeah, but
I do have a full path to the xcopy command.
Right, but more importantly, the parameters for the xcopy command should also have full path.
Yeah.
The parameters, like which directories are being
right,
copied.
Right, exactly, from and to.
Yep.
Try that and let us know.
One thing you can do as a test is to put in a rem command or a type command to make sure the batch file is getting called. Like before every
or
command.
An echo.
That's what, thank you, Dave. It's been a long time since I've done DOS.
Echo.
Put an echo command in to make sure that the file is actually being called right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Our next caller is Charlie. Charlie, where are you calling from?
Good morning. I'm down in Geneva.
Geneva.
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
We're here.
Yeah.
Hey, shot of trivia first. How about HP?
How about HP? It's wrong, but thank you for playing.
Thank you.
Nice try.
Okay.
Remember, the trivia question is... which was the first company to market a computer based on Intel's 386 processor. We now know it's not HP.
Okay, that's good. Say, XP Home, where do I find the scan disk?
It's under Tool Accessories, System Tool.
No.
You can also right-click on the disk itself, bring up Properties, and click Tools. It may not say Scan Disk anymore. It says Check Disk. There's check disk and check
defrag. Check disk means.
That's it.
And you really don't need to run it as much as you used to it in the older version of Windows because you're running NTFS FAT now, and scan disk and defrag aren't really needed that often.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, your phone calls, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Before you call...
Anonymizer. You've heard me talk about it. It's at getprivatenow.com. There's a $90 package. It's a $90 value. It's Spyware Killer, Anti-Spam Desktop, and the Anonymizer 2004 product itself. You can get it now for just $49.95. That's a value of $90 for only $49.95. But Nick, how do I get this, you may ask? Well, I answer you by saying go to www.getprivatenow.com. That's www.getprivatenow.com. Type in my name, Nick, and get that special price of $49.95. You can protect yourself from spyware, you can protect yourself from spam, and you can make yourself unlisted on the internet, so that you can surf the web without exposing yourself to fraud or any of the other stuff going on out there. That's www.getprivatenow.com. Enter Nick and get that package for $49.95.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbite, and we have a trivia challenge in effect. A trivia challenge for a free copy of Anonymizer, which was the first company to market a computer based on Intel's 386 processor. Write down your answer in the form of a question and tell us how much money you're betting. I'm sorry, that's a whole different show.
Yeah.
All you have to do is answer the question. No money involved. Doesn't have to be in the form of a question. If you answered correctly, you get a free copy of Anonymizer. Our next caller is Joe. Joe, where are you calling from?
Rochester.
Rochester, New York?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear us okay there?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. What's your question?
Actually, I wanted to try the trivia.
Trivia!
Actually, I guess I'll make it a true daily double. Was it Apple?
No. Apple?
Sorry, man.
Apple with a 386? No. Sorry, no.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There was a lot of speculation that IBM wanted to use, IBM engineers wanted to use the Motorola processor that Apple eventually did use, but IBM had already made a deal with Intel to use the 8088 in their calculators and typewriters.
Right.
So we already got the chip. Let's just use this inferior chip designed for a typewriter to make our big computer on it.
Right, exactly. Okay, our next caller is John. John, where are you calling from?
Greece.
Greece, New York. What's your question?
I've got a compact for serial with running Windows ME.
Stop. And, take James' mic away from him.
I'm not connected to the Internet.
Okay.
But I put a disk in my floppy drive, and when I went to shut the computer off, it told me that I had a virus. Am I really infected?
Quite likely.
And if I am, what do I have to do?
Okay. Here's your problem. If you're not connected to the Internet, it's a little hard to do much of anything. Do you have a CD-ROM drive in your machine?
Yes.
If you, then what you need to find is a friend who is both connected to the Internet. Well, three things. Connected to the Internet, you're pretty dang sure that their system is clean, and they have a CD burner. Then that person needs to go to the Security Tango at securitytango.com, follow the links in the Let's Dance section, and download Stinger, Adaware, SpyBot, and Zone Alarms Firewall.
He's not connected to the Internet.
Well, right, you're not connected to the Internet, so you don't need that. But the other three you need, and then you need to run them all. And you should get yourself a good antivirus program, even if you're not connected to the net. If you're putting disks in your floppies fairly regularly.
That's probably where you got the virus.
Exactly.
Yeah, depending on how old the virus it is, you might be able to buy an antivirus program now and have it work to remove the virus that you've got. The issue is that there's so many new viruses come out every day that when you buy a disk off a computer store shelf, it's already old and you need to download updates from the Internet
right,
to make
but you
it
still
effective.
Don't know what he got. Yeah. So it would be best to find some friend who can make that CD and then put it in your machine and get your stuff. Our next caller is Joe from Buffalo. What do you know, Joe?
Howdy.
Hi there.
I hope the guy that was having Mozilla trouble with his mail is still listening this week. I tried to get in last week, just couldn't do it before time ran out. He had his port number set to 995. Well, the reason that happens is because he probably had the SSL thing checked. He unchecks that would automatically change back to 110 where it should be.
Right. A lot of email programs allow you to do secure email transfers, but if your server, like Roadrunner, Frontier, whatever, doesn't support SSL, then it won't work no matter how much you type it at your end.
Right.
Right. So my question for this week is I just got myself a DVD-R, DVD-RW drive, and the only way it seems to work is if I write things in disk at once mode. I thought for sure it would be multi-session. Is this something inherent in DVD-Rs?
No, it's in the software that you're using.
Yeah.
Oh.
And one of the other differences is whether it's a minus R or a plus R format or dual minus plus.
The drive only does the dash R, unfortunately.
Right. The minus R is more compatible with DVD players on your television and older DVD ROM drives and computers. DVD plus R is a random rewrite format if your software supports it, but it's not compatible with the older stuff. So a lot of the newer drives coming out now are plus and minus, and you can do either way. But yeah, if your software only supports disk at once, then you only can write the whole disk in one shot. If it's an RW disk, you can erase it and write to it again.
Well, the software tries to do disk at once, but it gets an error back from the drive. I'm thinking it might be a limitation of the firmware in the drive itself.
Could be a lot of them. A lot of those drives when they first came out were not really good, and they needed driver updates, firmware updates. Have you checked the website of the manufacturer?
Yeah, it's a Mad Dog and it's a rebranded Toshiba. So I went to both those sites. Unfortunately, no firmware update for the drive itself.
How about update to the software that you're using?
That'd be DVD Record under Linux.
Okay, are you doing this? Is it an IDE drive?
Yes.
Is it on the same chain as the device you're reading from?
Oh no! It happens to be on the secondary chain.
Okay, good. That's good. It does sound like a driver issue. Now, of course, it may be that it's it's a Linux driver problem. But the good news is, if you're under Linux, there are like a zillion different DVD recording programs that you can try. And my suggestion is to try a different one.
Okie dokie. Oh, by the way, great interview at the beginning of the show.
Thank you so much. We had a great time with him. It was very kind of Mr. Atkinson to join us. Thank you. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
I just want to try trivia.
Go for it.
Might it have been Gateway?
It might have been, but it wasn't.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for playing.
Okay, we now know it's the question, of course, is what was the first computer company to market a computer based on Intel's 386 processor? So far, we know it's not HP, Apple, or Gateway. So we still have that trivia question open, and we're aching to give away a copy of the Anonymizer. Our next caller is Keith from Chi-Line, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
I don't have a question. I'm going to go for the trivia again.
Oh, excellent.
I'm going to say that it's Compaq.
You're going to say it's Compaq?
Yes.
You win! It is indeed Compaq.
Yay!
So do me a favor, Keith. Hang on the line. And the magnificent Mr. Robert Linton will be delighted, if not actually thrilled, to take your email address. And we'll send that off to the company. And in due time, they will send you a personal private copy of the Anonymizer software.
And what year was that?
That's great. I don't have any idea.
1986.
Yeah. So thank you, Keith.
Compaq also made the Fortune 500 list that year, so it was a good year for Compaq.
Yeah.
Compaq was pretty hot in terms of computers in those days in particular. One of the things that they had was they were one of the few truly IBM-compatible systems
that would run Microsoft Flight Simulator.
And that would run Microsoft Flight Simulator and Lotus
test.
1-2-3.
Yeah.
But those were the two big tests. And really, as far as businesses were concerned, as long as it ran, well, this is the way most businesses did it. As long as it ran Lotus 1-2-3, they could buy it and bring it in. But in order to make sure it was 100% IBM compatible, they also brought in the Flight Simulator for a test bed.
Yes.
But remember the biggest joke though on Compaq was when they introduced the portable.
Oh, I love that.
It had a handle.
It had a handle.
It was transportable.
It was a handle, and you could get a hernia carrying it around.
It looked like a lunchbox for the Incredible Hulk. It was this gigantic. It was this gigantic thing with a handle on the back.
And then that little green screen.
Yeah. It was one of the first all-in-ones.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it reminded me of the Osborne.
Yeah.
The Osborne 1. What a beautiful machine that was. But yeah, the Compaq had some terrific products out there. 100% IBM compatible. And they even beat IBM to market with the 8386 processor, which made them, by the way, very, very much in demand in businesses.
Because
you had the super fast 386 chip. Can't beat that.
Yeah, we sometimes make jokes in the Apple world is why Windows is so popular, because businesses bought IBM on their desk because that's what they had in their basements, and IBM had this huge sales force. Home users bought IBM compatibles at home so they could borrow their software from work.
Exactly. It's the truth. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Colleen from Perry, New York. Welcome, Colleen. What's your question?
Thanks for your show, and I have a question about Mozilla Download. You mentioned earlier that you should get an update if you were running Mozilla.
Yep.
And I'm always confused when I go to do an update or a download because there are so many different versions. You know, like I'm looking at one right now, Mozilla 1.7 Release Candidate 3, and there are newer versions, but they appear to be more experimental, like Alpha something. What would you recommend? I'm currently at Mozilla 1.4.
Well, you definitely want to go up to the latest. Here's the deal. Mozilla is constantly in the process of improving itself. The current out for real one is Mozilla 1.7.3.
Okay.
Anything beyond that, an alpha release means this is the brand new, hottest, off the coding floor.
And how daring are you?
And how daring are you? Because it's going to have, you know, it's brand new and untested, and here it is. Go play with it. If it breaks, let us know, but that's about as far as it's going to go.
Uh-huh.
The beta is, well, we're considering releasing this and hoping there aren't a lot of bugs left, but if there are, let us know. Whereas when you get the actual release...
Well, the next version is a release candidate, but it's really, really, really close to being released, but we're not quite... finally 100% sure yet.
Right. And then the actual release one is the one where they say, okay, we're ready to go. This is it. It's clean. It's good. It's ready to go. So if you're adventurous, one of the others is fine. But if you just want to browse the internet every day without a problem, get the actual release version, which in this case is 1.7.3.
Alrighty.
Alrighty. Thanks. I know that that can be a little confusing.
Intimidating. Very intimidating.
Very intimidating. But the point is, you get to make that choice and play with it. Our next caller, Maggie from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Maggie. What's your question?
Well, I don't know if you've heard of this before, but I have a Dell desktop.
Heard of them? Yeah.
And about a year ago, I was working on the computer, and the cursor arrow just kind of drifted off into Never Never Land.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes, sometimes I have to shut it down because it will not come back. Sometimes it comes back, sometimes it doesn't. I wondered if you can tell me what the problem is.
What OS are you running?
I'm sorry?
What operating system?
ME, Windows.
See, a lot of people run ME.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Here, it's one of a couple of things, Maggie. It could
be OS.
Could be the operating system. It could be that the driver needs to be updated, depending
which
on
they
what
won't
kind
buy.
Of which depending on
buy.
What kind of mouse you have. Particularly, is it just a regular mouse or is it a?
I've tried. I have a plug-in mouse that I use, but I've tried unplugging that and using the touchpad, and it doesn't make any difference.
Is the touchpad active at the same time as the external mouse?
Yes.
What I find a lot of people do. When they is this a desktop or a laptop?
Laptop.
Aha. What I find happens a lot, particularly with Dell, is people who rest their hands hard on the
wrist rests
on either side of that touchpad.
Mm-hmm.
If you press down real hard, you'll watch that cursor start to float away.
And you can be nicking it with your thumb and not realizing.
Yeah. I do that constantly, and it makes me crazy. When I go to put my hands on the keys, I'm a touch typist, yeah. So. I hit the home keys, I rest lightly on the home keys, and sometimes my left thumb drops and hits that touchpad, and suddenly my mouse is somewhere else. I'm typing in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens a lot, Maggie. It could also be that there's a certain amount of static electricity where you're working, and that can... Did I just hear an aha?
That could, I've got my printer there, static could be static. You know,
exactly. So unless you're ready to rip out your carpet and compute naked, probably your best bet is to try a little spray around the floor.
Okay.
There's also several viruses that make your cursor go nuts. So.
And that was the next thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So if make sure you've danced the Security Tango at securitytango.com. And make sure you're all up to date on all of that. But those are the things to try first.
Give us a call back.
And let us know. I would like to know if that solves the problem.
Yeah.
Because solving problems is so unusual here. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a Compaq Presario running on Windows 98. And if I let it sit for more than an hour or two, it locks up. Or a keyboard locks. I cannot get it to start running again. I've got a cold boot.
Does the mouse still work?
Yeah. No, nothing
okay,
works.
Then.
You want to go into the control panel and in power management?
Yeah.
Make sure all those items are turned off, like shut down the hard drive.
Especially the hard drive.
Sleep mode. Because Compaq is noted that if you let that hard drive go into sleep mode, it locks it right on up.
It won't wake up again.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask you one other quickie?
Yeah. Quickly.
When I first do turn on from, being shut off completely, I get sort of like a gray rectangle on the desktop, and I learned how to get rid of it. I keep refreshing on it, and it gets rid of it. But any idea why I'm getting this sort of a gray rectangle?
How do you refresh?
I right-click on the gray box, and... usually I'll get a refresh.
Does it look like a window trying to open?
No, it's like a maybe a 2-inch by 4-inch gray rectangle that comes up on the upper left-hand side of the screen.
It sounds like some application or spyware is trying to do something. Are you connected to the Internet?
No.
You still should, as we said earlier today, even if you're not on the Internet, you need to make sure, as we said to John from Greece, you need to make sure that your system is clean. So, again, you need to go to a friend who's got a burner and have him or her download the Security Tango stuff, including an antivirus program, and run it all on your machine to make sure you're clean. That does sound like there's a problem somewhere.
You can look in your...
I did download from Microsoft AdAware and... I forget what the other one is. Is it a spy bot?
Yeah. Microsoft doesn't make those allowable for download. That they're not Microsoft
products.
They're
not for Microsoft. But, listen, go to the Security Tango and dance the whole tango from top to bottom, starting with
Stinger
and then going to the others, because there are some viruses that will also disable things like your antivirus and Adaware and Stinger, or SpyBot. So you need Stinger first. You got to dance the tango in order. Our next caller is Kurt, calling from a cell phone. Welcome, Kurt. What's your question?
Yes, let's see. Good afternoon, I guess.
It is.
Reloading Windows XP. Actually, it was my son's computer, and he put in a new motherboard and a processor, and reloading Windows. And actually, I was doing that part of it, put the disk in, and it loaded it. Mm-hmm. And when it came into putting in the 16 or 20 digit code,
right,
it wouldn't take it.
Right. What you've got to do is in the registry, you're going to have to say, you know, go into the registration form, and you're going to have to re-register that product, which means you've got to call an 800 number.
But is it saying that this product is already activated?
No, it says that it, I'm on the road now. I forgot what it said, but it wouldn't accept it.
Right.
Is it possible it's an XP upgrade disk and it requires a previous OS first?
No, it's a home edition.
Home edition. So what Davis
called Windows, and they said, gee, that's a good key code.
Yeah.
Well, what likely happened is that it's already registered to the old machine, and it thinks you're trying to steal it. You're a pirate, and you're putting it on a new machine. So you need to call that 800 number.
And there's a long, it's like 10 group blocks of five numbers that you've got to sit there over the phone and read. And then if, you know, once it's complete, then they'll read you back a new key code to punch in.
So that's what you need to do in that order. Our next caller is Pat from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Two things for you.
Mm-hmm.
Might simplify your Security Tango a little bit.
Sure.
I don't know if you've ever heard of a program called Trap Cleaner.
No.
That is what it's called.
We like the name.
What it does is it deletes all your temporary internet files, all your temp files, recent documents. It deletes the index.dat files. Pretty much goes through and does everything in about a second. It's ccleaner.com if you want to check it out. It's a real good program. It's very thorough, and it gets rid of file fragments, all kinds of good stuff.
All right, we'll check it out.
Question. On my toolbar, I have a 98XD.
Yep.
On the toolbar, when you're, you know, whatever you're doing, it shows the reference to the program on the bottom.
Yep.
What my computer will do is probably every couple of days, it'll stop showing the references to the programs on the toolbar.
Yep.
And I restart and it's okay.
Yeah.
Is this just deal with it? It's 98 or?
It's Windows 98.
Memory needs. Never been
designed to stay on for more than an hour or two. I'm sorry.
You usually crash long before you run into a problem.
Unfortunately, there's nothing you can do. I wish there were, but there isn't. Our next caller, Jim, on a cell phone. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I've got a Dell computer and I'm running Windows XP. And when I restart the computer, what I get is a black screen with a little white dash on the upper left. And it just kind of blinks there. It could be like 5 minutes. It could be a half hour. And that happens just about every time I do that. And then the screen comes on where I can get log on.
This is on a restart?
Yes.
Yeah, 10 to 1 at quite often on reboots and that. There's something else if you go into start run MS config and go into the startup, you've got some other type of spyware that's trying to load and still stay there, even though you're shutting down. It's still trying to eat up the processor time and it's not letting it go down. So definitely run the Tango.
All right, we're done for another day. I want to thank everybody who called in. Apologize to everybody who didn't call in. I specifically must thank Mr. Bill Atkinson for being so incredibly generous with his time as to spend it with us here. We'll be back here next Sunday. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. We'll be back next Sunday on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.